Good afternoon. I'm Mark Allen with Gaper.io, and I'm here today with Troy Davis, the CEO of Lampros Labs. Good afternoon. Actually, good evening. Troy, how you doing?
It's a little dark, and I apologize. The lighting here is not great, but yeah, it's nice to meet you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for joining.
Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thank you for joining us today. So to start with, can you share a brief background of yourself and your work experience?
Absolutely. So I run a company called Lampros Labs. We're a software development group. We do not have a particular specialty, although we do have a couple of technologies that we have more experience with than a lot of others. But we don't try to play favorites with technologies. We're not very dogmatic about that sort of thing. We'd much rather work with interesting projects. We're definitely puzzle solvers. We love to have challenging problems, and we like to dig into them and find solutions to them. And that usually gives us an opportunity to invent something, which is one of our favorite activities. If we can find our way into it, is to invent something new that helps to solve a challenging problem. So that's one of our favorite things. You know, I guess for myself, I started programming when I was young. I was lucky enough, my parents recognized in me a very intense interest in technology and science and math and all of that. And I had a Commodore 64 as a 10-year-old.
Wow.
And once I had burned through the video games, which was the first thing I did, I then got into the basic programming manual and learned how to write some basic code. And I just kept writing. And I built a video game in grade school, in my seventh and eighth grade year. And then in high school, I pretty much tried to hide the fact that I could program because it wasn't very good for dating.
True.
By the time I got to college, being a nerd was cool again. So then I let my full nerd come out, you know, and I got into programming, and web design was just getting born at that point. The web was brand new when I was in college. And I wrote some very early web pages for a few organizations. My university program didn't have a web page, created that. All of a sudden I had an advertising agency wanting to hire me. Had no thought about really working in advertising, but it sounded really fascinating. So I wound up doing that for about 8 years. I worked in two different ad agencies in Cincinnati, learned a ton about a bunch of different business models and how for-profits and nonprofits and government and all of these kinds of, you know, different types of organizations, how they work and where they get their money from and why they spend it and what they do with it. And the messages that they're using, you know, their money in order to promote, you know, and the goals that they're trying to achieve. I thought this was all just fascinating. I just kept programming the whole time, though, writing code and learning how to be a, you know, good developer. And at some point I went into startups, and because our product that I was working on at an agency got angel funding, and we became a startup. And the first one, like a lot of startups, crashed and burned. And I was then on my own as an independent contractor for about 5 or 6 years, and really enjoyed that. I got to walk my son home from school every day, which is the best part of that lifestyle. It was fantastic. But then I decided at some point I was kind of tired of building teams for other people and then watching them kind of, you know, scatter to the wind, you know, every time the wind shifted somewhere. And I decided I wanted to start my own thing. So I founded Lampros Labs in 2014.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, so we've slowly grown over the years, and we went from, you know, it was just me and a couple of co-ops from, you know, UC, to now we've got about a dozen employees and, you know, half a dozen or so contractors we use very regularly and work with regularly. So that's good.
Cool. And I have to ask you, I mean, you're the CEO, but do you still write code?
I do. I don't write nearly as much code as I used to, of course. I have to do things like HR and invoices and billing and client negotiation. And, you know, I don't have a salesperson. That's me, right? So I have to go find my new projects. And so I spend a lot more time talking with people now than I do writing code. But I do love to write code still. And when I get a chance, I get a little opportunity here and there. I really do enjoy it and kind of relish it still. But, you know, I don't do it that often. And to be honest with you, I mentioned that, you know, we're all puzzle solvers. Most of that's because I'm a huge puzzle solver. That's what I love to do. And running a business is definitely the most challenging puzzle I've ever tried to put together.
It is, yes.
Far beyond learning how to program or how to structure a database or design a load scaling, you know, an adaptive cloud system to adapt to load, running a business is way harder.
It is, yes.
Yeah. So
you can control, right?
Yeah. Negotiating with factors that are much softer and you know, with much, I don't know what you want to say, much fuzzier lines around the edges and, you know,
Well, and I share your, believe it or not, I started as an assembler programmer, and now I do still do some JavaScript from time to time.
Well, very cool. Well, that's excellent.
Yeah, it's always good to get the old, you know, get the old brain going again. And like,
yeah,
have a little bit of challenge. JavaScript is very much different than assembler, I can tell you that.
Yeah, man. Wow. Mm-hmm. You know, there's very few programmers now that really write assembler.
It's
almost a novelty thing at this point. You know, somebody learns it as kind of a gag, you know, so they can brag about it at school or something. I know there's still some need for that, though. I mean, it's not like it's gone away entirely. I had a friend many years who wrote assembly code for like printer drivers and these sort of things.
Yeah,
you know, where low level performance with low power is real important.
And it's funny when I talk to some of the young kids coming out of college that I was telling them I was an assembler programmer. They don't even know what it is. I don't know. I don't think they teach it anymore.
Yeah, no kidding.
Interesting. So, Lampros Labs, you've got a staff and all that. You have an office somewhere in the Cincinnati area.
So it's like a Manhattan, New Jersey kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. So Cincinnati is right on the Ohio River. Just on the other side of the river is Covington, Kentucky, for us.
Mm-hmm.
There's Newport, Kentucky's there too. Mm-hmm. But you know, there's like Cincinnati's at the conjunction of two rivers, right? Yep. So Covington is one of the Kentucky cities on the other side of the Ohio River. So it's a very short drive for me. I get in my car and I'm at work 15 minutes later. But, you know, to some people, you know, as I mentioned to you before we started taping, when I first started doing it, it felt like I was driving over the great water.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't feel that way anymore.
So. Yeah. But now, do you still go into your office now that, you know, since COVID, or does everybody
want to go? We shut down the office in March, which is when COVID started hitting in our area. We actually had an incident where somebody walked through our office and we then found out the next day that she was tested positive for COVID.
Mm.
And that put the fear into us pretty quickly. So actually this Saturday, which is the 13th, I believe, will be our coronaversary. So that's 1 year since we shut our office down.
Wow.
So I've been in just to pick up mail. And, you know, and that sort of thing. And that's about it. My landlord has been very happy that I continue to pay my rent every month. Not everybody's doing that. And, you know, I mean, commercial folks don't have protection from eviction, right? So, I mean, you know, they can certainly, you know, pitch you out if you're not paying your rent. It's not like the residential stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But still, yeah, there were a lot of businesses that were struggling and trying to make deals with landlords and all of that. Luckily, we didn't, you know, we weathered that storm a lot better than, companies did and didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
But and we're looking forward to getting back,
right?
You know, and I wound up getting vaccinated. I just got my second shot last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I was a volunteer. I wasn't on the list yet, but I was volunteering for the health department to do traffic duty.
Mm-hmm.
And happened to have a dose left over after a session, and I was the only one left. And so I got a shot.
Oh, cool.
So got my second shot last weekend, but I'm the first person in the company to get it. I figure probably by midsummer, we'll probably have most of our staff vaccinated, in my guess. And then we'll reopen the office and we'll start doing it, you know, back at the office again. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Do you imagine you'll go back to everyone in the office basically 9 to 5, or do you think you'll go to more of a hybrid model?
We never did a solid 9 to 5. That wasn't really a thing. I mean, you know, if you really want to kill a great developer, make him work a 9 to 5 shift.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That's not really how we worked in the first place. So I was never much of a 9 to 5 person either myself. I keep odd hours and I've always preferred it that way. I have to get a lot of stuff done during business hours. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
So I still wind up getting up early in the mornings most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a lot of our developers, you know, I would lose my best developers if I said there was a strict check-in policy at 9 a.m. And that would be disastrous to my business. So there's no way. So, you know, and I'll say there's enough people who understand that there's software developers and programmers out there that are that way, right? That they are night owls or they're odd hour kind of people, that for whatever reason, it hasn't been an obstacle to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we still have project managers up early in the morning, you know, ready to talk to clients and, you know, and if there's a problem, we can get somebody up and we can get them working on it. That's not an issue.
Yeah,
but the production work and the regularly scheduled work usually happens a little later morning.
Yeah, no, I know. I've had developers under me that they did their best work at 2 a.m.
Oh yeah.
I got all these emails when I woke up. It's like, okay, it's working, so they're good.
Yeah, I'm still kind of in the position where I'm still catching some of their emails before I go to bed. So
yeah. Well, as you get older, I tend to go to bed a little bit earlier now. So
I'm sure it'll shift that way for me over time too. But.
Yeah, and you get to that point where you say, it can wait till the morning.
Well, very cool.
Yeah. So what do you think, I mean, in general is going to be the future of remote development? Do you think it's, and remote work in general, do you think it's here to stay, or do you think, people will go back to the old ways?
I can't imagine. Well, I mean, so there will be people that will go back to the old ways, especially people who have contract agreements and physical security requirements and, high security access controls. And those people, there's no way that they're going to change and adapt. I mean, they're just not going to. If they haven't already, they're not going to. So I think there's always going to be a segment of our industry that's going to be in-person work no matter what you do. I think it will continue to shrink, though. And long-term, I think, those jobs become much fewer and far between and much rarer. And it'll become a lot more common, I think, for most developers to either work from home or to work from co-working spaces if they choose to do that, or to work from the coffee shop or the gym or wherever it is they're comfortable. Yep. But they're just going to work from wherever it is they want to work. And as long as they do great work and it's valuable and it drives that demand up, I think everybody's going to live with that. And I think we'll get better at developing tools to help us do this. I mean, software developers have been subjected to a lot of crap this last year, in terms of bad online tools, not going to mention the one we're recording in right now.
Yeah.
And it's been the bane of many of our developers' existences recently. But that's the sort of thing that I think now that we're kind of forced to live in that world full time for a year, we've got a lot of ideas on how this stuff could be a lot better now.
Yes. So software developers usually solve problems, as you say. We touched on Lampros Labs, but are you more of the type of company that you come in and you're with someone for years, or are you more the, hey, you've got a problem, we're going to come in and solve it, then we get out? What is your niche and who do you normally work with? What types of customers?
I've got one client that literally I've been working with them in one form or another for 12, 13 years, before my company started, right? I was just an independent contractor doing stuff for them. And actually the guy who hired me from that company was my former boss from my first job out of college, right? So spent a few years apart, not working together, and decided we liked working together again. So we kept working together. But I have some long-term clients that we work with for years and years, and we provide ongoing maintenance and service and monitoring and help them. I mean, sometimes we train their clients, whatever it takes, right? But I guess at the same time, also we do some short duration things that happens too. Of course, like any business, the short duration projects are harder to derive a profit from. So, they're not as desirable ultimately. Quick hit projects can be fun and exciting, and the developers often love them. But, they're kind of flash in the pan usually, and they go away quickly. So I would say that, variety is definitely the spice of life in this case. It's good to have a little bit of everything.
Yep.
But I think if you don't have a healthy portion of those consistent customers, they keep coming back, it's going to be really tough to survive.
Yeah. They keep the lights on and then you can, and right. And then you do.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, you can afford to take some chances on some of those flash in the pan ideas.
Right.
Hopefully one will work out and it'll be a big upswing for everybody, but
right.
I mean, there's a reason why they call them flash in the pan.
There is. Yes. what's the success rate for startup? It's like 10%, right?
Oh, less than that.
Mm.
Yeah, it's like 7, 6. Oh,
really? Wow.
Yeah. So most of them, I think the survival rate 5 years is like 10%.
Yeah.
Right. But the survival rate like 10 years is like 2 or 3%, something of that nature. Yeah. So it depends on where you put the cutoff.
Yep. But you never know. You get just that one.
Yeah. You get a hold of a tiger by the tail and, of course, it's terrifying to let go of it. I guess it's a big deal there.
Yes. But, well, Well, Troy, I want to thank you for your time tonight. It's been great talking to you. We're both in a similar industry, so there's plenty of business to go around, as you know.
It was a pleasure meeting you, Mark, and thank you so much for having me. And I welcome any questions from anybody in the audience. If I can be of help in any way, I'm happy to. And it was a pleasure meeting you. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
All right. Take care.